Hey everyone, welcome back to the Spates Waddle Ad Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to another episode, and thank you to everyone who has been sharing the podcast, whether it's social media, word of mouth. You guys are true lads for doing that, and it is helping massively. And also thank you to Spates for obviously supporting the podcast, making this happen, bringing you all of these episodes. They're true lads there at Spates, so good on you, mate. What a lad. Well, I'm loving how this podcast has sort of grown into a platform for people to share their insights and help others in similar positions. And I'm very grateful for to have a true lad on today. He is keen to help players change their mindset around life after sport. Throughout his career, the self-acclaimed white battler played for plenty of teams along the way, including Manawatu, Wellington, Hawke's Bay, Canterbury, and in Super Rugby, he played for the Hurricanes, the Rebels, the Highlanders, and the Crusaders. He is a true legend of New Zealand rugby. It is one of the greats, Jed Robinson. Welcome, mate.
Thanks, mate. I think all the boys say when you, well, I'm always interested to know how you're going to do that, eh? It probably takes up the whole podcast to say what teams I've played for.
Geez, you played for a few, eh?
Yeah, mate. Well, you don't go out to do it like that, eh? But you've got to find a contract too, right? Like, you've got to chase the money and where it is. So, yeah.
Was it always, was it never really your decision to move? Was it always, you had nothing?
No, I mean, I started off at the Canes. Yeah. We go to the Super, and there was two pretty good hookers sitting there with Andrew Hoare and Dane Coles at that stage. So Colesy and me, even though I'm 3 years older than Colesy, I was kind of on that same timeline in terms of trying to kick off into that stuff.
Yeah.
So I was probably more like Hoare as a starter. And then Hoare was obviously playing all the time, but then you've got Colesy, who's going to be better off the bench, I wonder. You flip and just make gaps and score tries left, right and centre. Yeah. So I spent 2 years there and probably got half a dozen games. But this was back in the time, you probably remember this, when if you were wider, you could only play if there was an injury.
Oh, yeah.
So Hoare got injured on India tour and I had two or three games. I actually, funnily enough, the only game I did start, Colesy will hate the story, so it was the second week. Hoare was out for the first 3 weeks. He said, "Jed, you're in the squad." And then the second week, we're playing the Crusaders down here at old Jade Stadium before it went under.
Yeah.
And after the first week, Colesy had a few beers and ended up being put in the cells. Also drunk and disorderly in company in Power Pram.
Oh, I remember him telling that yarn on his podcast.
And so I rock up on Monday. So there's only three of us. And then they go, Colesy's not allowed to play this week. He's been banned for a week for his behaviour. So Jed, you're starting against Crusaders. So I've played 10 minutes of Super Rugby.
Yeah.
You're starting against Crusaders and we've got no other hooker in the squad.
So you had to go 80.
So they said, mate, Jake Allison, Jake's going to practice his throwing this week. And you're going 80. And I was like, you can see it, mate. And this is like when the Saders, this is Thorny, McCaw, EC, like everyone. I was like, oh, shit.
You're ready. But knowing Colesy, he probably did that on purpose because he's such a lad. He'd always give guys an opportunity. I remember he did it for Lawrence Corlett when he didn't get an opportunity.
David Hall, same thing.
True.
Yeah, man. So
deliberately spent the night in the cells for you.
Yeah, so, mate, I went 80. But that was my only start and only really time I played. But I, looking back on it, played the best game I've probably played. But I got to play 82, so I really got into it.
Yeah.
And then over the next year or so, I only played two or three games. And then the Rebels kicked off.
That's right.
And I was like, man, I've had a bit of a taste for it. I've been on the edge. I needed to find some. But this was the times too when you could only really get picked within your franchise.
Mm.
So, you know, now everyone just gets picked the best. But I was in the Hurricanes franchise.
The logjam in front of you.
So I was either stay here and wait or shoot off to outside of New Zealand at that stage.
Mm.
So the Rebels came in. It was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So.
You grew up in Wellington, right?
Grew up in Wellington, So Wellington born and bred, like wanted to play for the Hurricanes, the Lions. That was who I was. So even after 2 years to leave, that was like, man, like this is, but I'm 27 by this age. I was a battler. Like I played 100 games of club rugby before I even really got an opportunity.
Oh, so really?
I was the old school.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, because out of school, I did get offered an academy contract.
With the Hurricanes, with Wellington.
Wellington at that stage, because they didn't even do super academies at that stage. Taking us back, eh? and then, but I was a cricketer too. So I was playing good cricket and was like, came out, was like, man, do I want to pursue cricket? Do I want to pursue rugby? I'm not sure.
Mm.
So I said, look, can I have a year? Like, give me a year. I'm not sure.
To think about it.
Yeah, to think about
it. Far out. That's a tough decision.
Yeah, man.
Because a year.
A year. So I said, look, I want to play a season of club rugby. I want to keep going cricket and then I'll come back to you. So I did the year out. And sadly to cricket, the pathway in that age group, it's just, there's not a lot and mm. still isn't. Mm. You either, you know, you play under 19s, try and make New Zealand 19s, and then you've got to try and get to first class. There's no mm. real.
So did you play New Zealand 19s?
I made the squad, yeah. the 24-man squad. So this is Ross Taylor, Jesse Ryder, and we had a trial down here at Lincoln. And I think I went like 10 overs, 1 for 85, and Jesse and Ross just went berserk. But they went berserk on everyone because they were just.
So you're a bowler?
Bowler, left arm orthodox.
So, oh, wow.
Mate, I'm way outside the norm. So I was a chunky little fat little white boy bowling little left arm doorknobs. And then so I go to cricket and they go, mate, you're too big. And then I go to rugby and they go, you got to be bigger.
Too small.
So I was like living in the in-between.
How'd you go with the bat?
At a first 11 level, I could hit it well, but at that level, I was 9 or 10.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I could noodle it off the hip and play a little guide shot, and that was about it. But good fielder and just talk crap and
roll
a few doorknobs. So I was going all right, and I was like, man, I'm not sure. Did the year and then went, nah, I'll go back. I think rugby's it. So I went into the academy manager and said, hey, mate, I made a decision. I'm keen to get back. And he goes, we don't want you anymore. And I was like, oh, right to the soul, eh? They said, you're too slow. You're fat, you're chunky, you're too slow. One paste, they call me, which was I got told my whole life. One paste, and then they said, no, mate, we don't want you anymore. And I just was like, oh, what have I done?
Yeah. Did you try and go back to cricket at this point?
Well, I was still playing cricket, but I don't know. This is partly what we'll talk about as we go on. I think I had a framework in my mind when anyone told me I wasn't good. I was like, I always kind of not wanted to prove them wrong, but I used that kind of anger or sadness to go, okay, I'm going to get better because I want to prove you wrong. And I was still a battler. Like, I wasn't like Colsey. I didn't have this. I had the fundamentals of an old school hooker. I was like Shane. I was just all about effort.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was me, really. And then so I was like, oh, nah, okay, I'll start training and like really put it in, because this was the problem when I look back on it was, I wasn't all in on cricket and I wasn't all in on rugby. So yeah. I was just kind of the in-between.
Yeah.
So how did I expect to get better in either of them if I wasn't really fully committing to either?
Yeah. What would you have done differently there, committed to one, when you got the academy opportunity?
I don't know. At that time, I was like, man, I should have taken it the year before.
Mm.
But again, I don't know if I'd be even here talking to you right now unless I did that year.
Yeah.
To fuel me to go, all right, I can still do this. Like, I can prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And then that kind of gave me a little chip on the shoulder to, and then I trained better that year and then did well the end of the year. And then they come back to me. So this is almost three years out now. They go, oh, no, Jed, now we want you.
Mm.
I was like, oh, sweet. Okay, I'm in now.
And that was you self-driving all of that.
Yeah. So yeah, like we know, right, in terms of like the high performance, if you're not driven,
mm.
like if you're not willing to put it in, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was always going to be that effort drive guy over anything else because I waddled. I had this like waddle. I ran terribly. Everyone was like, the coaches would come up after 10 minutes and, gee, you look like you played 80 minutes. And I'd be like, oh, nice. I just waddle.
That's me running fresh.
Yeah, it is. I had this waddle and I was like, do I have a short leg? And I'm like, no, you don't have a short leg. You just waddle. So that kind of fueled me. So then, yeah, if we go back, so the Hurricanes kind of worked that way through, battled in, played really well in that one Crusaders game, and then effectively that got me the contract in Rebels, game the year before. So I'd heard – so that Adam Fryer was their kind of marquee signing for the Rebels at that stage.
Yeah.
But he was on the outer, and I reckon he signed for money more than playing, and he blew his back out.
Oh, yeah.
So it must be getting towards the end of that Wellington Lions season, and then they were just looking for another hooker. And then they said, I found out later on that they went to Crono. So the coach knew, the Fords coach, Mark Bakewell, knew Crono well and said, who's the best hooker in New Zealand that's not signed?
Yeah.
And he said, well, it's Jet, because I was the last one left.
Yeah.
So I got a one-year deal at the Rebels. So I was like, mate, I can't.
Yeah.
Do I stay here at the Hurricanes behind Colsey and Horry?
Yeah.
Or do I go to the Rebels?
Yeah.
On a one-year deal, 100% I'm going. Like, I've got to see what I got. And that was the best thing I did, because all that layering of training that I had done up into that stage, I got an opportunity to play regular minutes, and I played the best rugby I've ever played in my life because I had the opportunity to play, but I had all that stacking of training to allow me to open that door and see what it was.
Yeah.
And we actually beat the Canes in Melbourne that year.
Did you?
Well, that was the year that Hammett took over.
Yeah.
So, obviously there was a lot going on in the background and the boys weren't probably at their best, but, yeah, I played awesome against the Canes, but I was, you know, like I was hungry to go.
You're right up for that one.
So best thing, and then I signed an extra couple of years. So I had 3 years and was playing all the time and earning better money there than I would here, and was like, and then I got into a decision, shit, I've done really well here for 3 years, and now – Kevin Mealamu and Hori are coming towards the end. So this is coming up to 2015 World Cup. And I'm 30 though. So I'm like, shit, do I come back and like see if I can really have a dig at this for the 2014 season, see if I can potentially be an All Black? Because like I would have, even though that was my dream, I was like, I don't know if I'll, you know, like,
yeah.
Even though I wanted to be there, but after playing 3 years and going, shit, I'm actually going all right. If I do this in New Zealand, I could be in the mix, I reckon. And this is another long story, ended up at the Highlanders. So Hori retires, pushed out, retired, depends how you look at it, with Jamie Joe after their 2013 year when they signed everyone in and then they came last.
Yeah.
So we played the Highlanders in the last game of that 2013 season. And then I get the old Jamie Joe, you know, Jamie Joe stories. So he flicks me an email, goes, Jed, I can even say how he wrote it in the email. Gee, I mean, we're in, you know, we're playing catch up for a coffee, you know, like, oh yeah, okay, Jamie, because I had Jamie at the line, so I knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And he sat down and goes, yeah, Hori's going to retire, or we're going to make him retire, depends how you look at it. Keen to have you next year.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? And I was like, oh yeah, I'm interested. Could you, with Jamie, man, like this big guy in front of you, I'm 30 though. Like, so I'd kind of keep it close to my chest. Like, yeah, mate, I'm pretty keen, pretty interested. And I'd signed back with Hawke's Bay coming back.
Oh, yeah.
I tried to go to the Lions, but they were all ready. So came back to the air. And then, so as the season went on, he kept emailing saying, yeah, mate, we'll just sign you. We're just sorting out the Hori stuff. We're going to sign you. I was like, shit, this is taking a bit more time than I thought.
Yeah.
And it got to like the day before the cutoff date. And he flicks me an email and goes, oh, mate, sorry, mate, we're out of salary cap money. We can't sign you anymore. And I was like, and he just sent me an email too, and I was dark.
Oh, true.
Because everyone else was signed up.
Like, yeah.
He had verbally told me 3 or 4 times, mate, you got it. We just got to sort it out. And then he goes, oh, but we can take you on wider. And I'm like, mate, like I've just left $200,000 a year at the Rebels to come home for this, and you want to give me a 40 grand contract at wider? And I was like, So that took a bit, but I had to take it. Like,
oh, you took it?
Well, I had no.
Rebels wouldn't take you back.
Well, funnily enough, the day before I was supposed to drive down for pre-season training, shit, no one knows this, I got a call from the Rebels going, mate, would you come back? Like,
yeah.
I was probably going to be captain leadership group. Like, it was a big call to come back.
Yeah.
Really good money. But it's like, I had to keep thinking back, what was my boyhood dream? Why was I here? I wanted to be an All Black, right? Mm.
Did the Wallabies ever cross your mind? Because obviously it would have been 3 years at that point too, eh?
I played like 3 minutes for the Junior All Blacks.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, that 2009 year when I played that one game for the Crusaders, Colin Cooper was coach.
Yeah.
And then he was New Zealand Juniors coach at that stage. And then there was about 27 hooker injuries. So I got the call up against Fiji and played 2 minutes off the bench.
And got capped.
So, yeah. I mean, it might have been different going over. I was New Zealand is who I am.
Yeah.
I don't even think, and everyone's got their different reasons. I would have said no, even if they said yes. I was in probably talk for Australia A, the ones that didn't know that I played, but I would have said no. I don't think I could play against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
So I came back, and then it was like, and then the Rebels called me the day before I was supposed to go down to the Highlanders, and they were like, mate, come back. We'll give you 150K, come back. And I was like, 40K, 150K.
Doing the math, that's a bit better.
Just had I had a baby of 9 months old.
Yeah.
Wife had moved back. You know the story, mate. And I was like, but why am I here? It's not actually about the money. It is, but it's not.
Was your wife loving Melbourne?
She loved Melbourne, but we had just had it when we were in Melbourne, we had no kids.
Yeah.
So it's different. And then we come back to Dunedin, and then we had our son. And I was like, what do we do? I think. But again, we spoke about it, and I was like, why did we come back in the first place? You came back here to chase your dream. Mm. What's money for that?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. But the biggest problem for me was I held on to that angst with Jamie a lot for that whole season. Like I was pretty dark at him. I never let him know that at the time because I wanted to play.
Mm.
But it probably affected me because I was really angry at him.
Yeah.
Angry at how it went down. And that probably sat with my values. I just felt like it could have been done a lot different, even if you had just called me and told me the situation.
Yeah.
That year, I actually played all right. Liam Cobham was going pretty well too. And this is the year before Ash Dixon came down. So probably started 5 or 6 games and went all right, but not enough to be an All Black.
Mm.
And then...
when did you know that? Like, when did you know the World Cup dream was over?
I mean, that was a 2014 year, and I went all right. And I still thought if I could play regularly, but my body was probably starting to tell me I was getting to, I mean, 31 now. Mm. And then I played all right against the Crusaders that year for the Landers. And
you love the Crusaders. You love playing against the Crusaders.
Well, everyone does though, right? Like, you've got it. Like, that's the pinnacle. We still are, right? Yeah. You know it from the inside now. From the outside, we got to go. Like, this is it. And then Thorny was playing for the Landers at that stage, and Flinney was leaving.
Just had
Flinney on. So then Thorny kind of rang here and said, hey, this guy's not bad. He'd probably be good to come up here with Flinney leaving. So that kind of started that conversation to come here. So you can see why I moved. I didn't move because I wanted, I wanted to stay at the Landers because they got the culture right, but I found it really hard because of what had happened with Jamie. So I almost, in spite of myself, said, I'm not playing for you anymore in my head.
Yeah.
And didn't pursue that. But then Dicko was coming too. And look what Dicko's done at the Highlanders and where he was going. So it's easy for me to say if I stayed there, I would have played. But, Ash was unbelievable and the leader he became down there and who he was. So it's always easy for me to say, so came here and Cody was kicking off, really. Mm. So I came here wanting to play and then realised pretty soon that I was only here as cover.
How did you know that? Just a different turn of pace, was it?
Cody was that year, he kind of was just coming in. It was him and Benny Fennell's turn. But when I had spoke to them, I said, look, I'm only coming if it's all on for all of us. I'm not coming here just to be your cover. But I was, so I was probably dark again. So I was like, just tell me the truth, man. Came here and the career probably just whittled away in the last couple of years. And it was probably a bit of a disappointing last couple of years for me. But Cody deserved what he got. Mm. He was like Colsey. He had X Factor that I didn't have. I was the battler that waddled along and could make 20 tackles. And
Cody's line breaking sidestep.
And they were playing on the edge, and I don't play on the edge. I'm around the ruck doing my thing and
running your jelly bean line.
Yes, yes.
A lot of requests about the jelly bean line.
Yes, I love it.
Talk to me about that one.
Yeah, mate. So, and that probably speaks to how I play. I was, even though I was slow and fat and throw a ball in, and that was about it, I was probably like Snakey a little bit. I had a good understanding from the game and anticipation, and I could see things.
Yeah.
So I probably had a mind of a 10, but was in a body of a hooker. So at the Rebels, because I was playing regularly, I started seeing shapes of defense and what was going on, and we played a lot of rough off 9. And I was going, mate, there's this like this with vision, everyone's looking up and your head on a swivel, we were talking about look up straight. But there's this peripheral bit around when you're on the D, especially when you're around the ruck, where you've got to watch 9 and you've got to watch first runner.
Mm.
So you can't see out the side, right out the side of your eye.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what if I just ran flat across the D line and they can't actually see me?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. This. And so then we started practicing at training preseason, And we actually played Canes in the preseason. I scored 2 tries off it. And I was like, man, this is me. This is going to be my trademark. So many people are jelly me like, yeah. So then, yeah, so I always said it's the undefendable line.
Yeah.
And then everyone cracked up. I said, no, it's not. It's true. And then, so when I played for the Landers, I scored against the Crusaders for it. And this just became my line.
Yeah.
But then after a while, everyone knew that that's where I just stood.
Yeah.
And so, so I'd waddle along on the line and then just kind of do a little banana or jelly bean and then just pop the ball to me and score.
Yeah.
So that just kind of became my trademark and
sort of gone out of the game since you left.
Yeah, I know. It's my thing. Yeah, I'm back coaching at Burnside, so I'm trying to bring it back. But it's a gutsy line because you're almost offside and and you've got to get your halfbacks online. But yeah, that kind of became my little jelly bean trademark.
I do remember it well. So then what was next for you after the Crusaders?
Yeah, so end of 2016. Knew that last contract was probably – I was going into retirement. Mm.
Did you ever look at Japan or overseas or
– I did, but the problem was Japan at that stage didn't take any front rowers.
Yeah.
So it's only just changed in probably the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So even when I was retiring, Jake Ellison, who's a good mate of mine, he had to go back to flanker to go to Japan. So he changed. He was a loose head prop and used to play flanker. And then he signed as a flanker that could play prop just so he could get his money and get over there. So they didn't take anyone. But I lost – if I was going to go, the best time was to go was after the Rebels because I was playing regularly. People could see I was playing. My worth was up. But I came back and then played 7 games over 3 years starting and – so I kind of got out of – and then the body started getting a few neck issues and pain down my arm and old Deb gave me the old – got an x-ray and said, how long are you playing for more, Jed? And I was like, oh, I'm probably retiring at the end of the year. She goes, probably a good thing. So the writing was on the wall. But probably the other thing, as you know, is my mindset had changed probably towards the end. And I hate to think back on it, but I probably had stopped trying to be my best towards the end. I was there because I'd signed, but I wasn't playing – I knew it was coming towards the end and then the body started breaking down. But I think the body started breaking down because I wasn't fully 100% into trying to be my best anymore. And it's I don't like saying it because it wasn't who I was as a person. But looking back on that last part, I was probably not taking a paycheck, but I was just doing enough to get by.
Interesting point around like mentally checking out before you physically, like everyone talks about – oh, your body, you're slowing down now, you're past your 30s. But you see guys well into their late 30s who obviously still mentally are switched on around everything, whereas I was like you, I believe. Mm-hmm. I had a dodgy hip, but mentally started finding it really hard and you just see everything deteriorate pretty quickly, eh?
Yeah, and that probably taught me a little bit about the mindset and stuff and what we'll talk about soon around how we structure it. And it's actually called positive aging, would you believe? So, you know, like we hit, you know, in rugby terms, you hit 30, you're an old bugger. Yeah. Everyone's like, mate, you're old, you're 30. And then so you start living into this, I'm 30, I'm almost done.
Yeah.
And then I could see the transition in my mind and that started actually playing out in the body. So then retired. And if you look back on my career, I would have been said that I was actively ready for after rugby.
When did that start for you?
Probably I really started honing down when I was here.
Yeah.
So the last 2 years, because I knew it was coming. I had 2 years to kind of get ready.
Yeah.
But even pre that, I actively used my PD time. I, you know, like if we did promos, I was the one that got up and talked because I was the guy that could talk. And I kind of actively tried to partner with people doing work.
Yeah.
So I was probably not a poster boy, but I was one that would go, oh, Jeb will be sweet.
Yeah.
You know, like, because he's good and he knows who he is. And
And you do it. Oh, I was just talking to Matt Todd in the coach's office before, and you had a lot of like side hustles too, didn't you? Like lots of different businesses all sorts of different things.
And that will talk, So, but I was searching.
Yeah.
I was searching for what was next for me without understanding who I was and what really drove me. So I ended up starting a food truck up after I retired.
That was one of them.
I love food. So, and I always make pizzas for the boys. Oh man, I should kick off a pizza truck. And I had a mate who was had a cafe over in Papua New Guinea. Oh, I chuck the pizza truck out front. So I did some numbers. Oh, I could do this.
Yeah.
But again, it was, and I had it for 5 years, but it came a little side catering gig, and it was really good for me. It taught me heaps about small business. Got to go into heaps of people's houses when they were having parties and at their best and enjoying themselves, and I made pizzas for them. Again, I was searching for something without really having, as you spoke about with you, around that self-awareness. I didn't really have an understanding, because I was sad. I was sad that I had finished, but I didn't know why. I knew I wasn't sad that I wasn't playing anymore, but I couldn't decide if I was sad because I didn't have a job, or I didn't know what my next purpose was, or so I was kind of like wading through. And my wife is a GP, but she wasn't. She was training to be a GP, so we knew when I was retiring that she needed to be through her training by the time we had finished, because that if we didn't have her working, I didn't know what I was doing, what I was going to earn. I'm not from Christchurch. We're staying here. If I went back to Wellington, I probably would have picked up something because that was where my support network was.
Yeah.
So she, the last couple of years of me playing, it was pretty challenging because she was doing all her study, and we had two kids. So she was trying to get all the GP done so she could be a GP when we finished, which was hard for her as well, and doing all the study. So the day that I crossed over and retired, she kind of took over and became the breadwinner in the house, and was doing two or three days a week. And then I was trying to find the next thing.
Yeah.
So I was, I started up a little lapel, trying to sell lapels with people. I have a bit of an entrepreneurial mind, but I was like, what? But there wasn't much meaning and purpose behind it. Yeah. I was just doing it for the sake of it a little bit, which is, but I needed to probably work through that. And then I got to about 3 years out and had learned, as we do, we learn heaps about our mind and how it works, how it helps us be our best on the field. And I was really like fascinated in growth mindset, what that looked like, what, why, how I use it in my career to help me get to where I was as a battler.
Yeah.
And started reading heaps more towards the end of my career about positive psychology. And then was like, man, how can I study this? And I was like, and the place to do it is University of Pennsylvania. I'm like, I can't go to America and do it. PhD, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've got this stage three kids in New Zealand. I'm like, what do I can't do that. And then I heard through the grapevine that there's a diploma in positive psych run by New Zealand Institute of Wellbeing and Resilience.
Oh, yeah.
So a lady called Dr. Lucy Hone and Dr. Denise Quinlan. Lucy Hone's famous because she's got a TED talk actually on here, how she used, sadly, her daughter died in a car accident when she was about 11 years old. And she used the positive psychology techniques to help her grieve. And there's a really awesome podcast on that. So I was like, man, I've got to do this diploma. This is a chance for me to learn a bit more and see what it's about. Yeah. So yeah, almost 3 years ago, I did the diploma and Denise Quinlan ran it. And it was flipping unbelievable for me. It just, the amount of light bulb moments of, oh, this is it. This is what I was searching for when I retired, and getting way more self-awareness around why I was sad, what was going on. And I was like, man, this is it. Like, and then it was, and I was like, I've got to do something with this. And then, and it'd be interesting to talk to you about, like, how did you find it when you retired? Like, how did you find when you crossed over that day and it was done? How did you find it all?
It all happened really quickly for me. Like, I went straight from, I had hip surgery, went straight from playing to coaching basically within that week. So was real fast, and always felt like I was still in that environment. But I always, talking to all the players who have been on, and just that instant, what now? And lack of purpose, lack of identity, those are real common things that sort of pop up. Missing the boys, missing the changing room, the camaraderie, and all that sort of thing that everyone loves about the game. But you think you've got heaps of good friends, and then you're not playing, and they're all still friends, but you're sort of out of that circle. So
totally, yeah, yeah. And it's probably good for you because you got to stick into the environment a little bit by coaching.
Yeah, I was lucky how it worked out for me, but
So and that was probably, so this, the model that they use, and it's it comes from Martin Seligman, who's like the Richie McCaw of positive psych. He's like the goat. And it's around, and it's similar to Timmy's around, there's five key areas they talk about, and then there's another one, Vitality, which is kind of add on. It's called the PERMA model. And the five key areas, the first one's around positive emotion.
Yeah.
So if we look, when we're playing, how much positive emotion do we have at training We play games, the laughter, the humor, the enjoyment, playing regularly. Like positive emotion is here all the time. And you don't realize what guys don't realize, and this is a self-awareness piece, a whole heap of what happens in a sporting environment or a rugby team is actually really quality well-being stuff. But we do it because we need it for high performance.
Yeah.
But it's actually high performing in terms of flourishing in life as well.
Yeah.
Because the thing is about positive emotion, it's not saying we need to be in positive emotion all the time, but resilient people don't get stuck in one emotion. Yeah. So they don't get sad or glum all the time and just get stuck there. They can come out of it. And so if we have a bad game and we're a bit sad or glum or we get injured, but then we come to training and we're back into the next phase of what we've got to do because we've got a goal to get to. We're having, you know, mini team games. We're having lunches together.
Yeah.
So that's actually doing all the positive emotion for us, but we don't realize at the time it's making us feel good because of that.
Yeah.
And then the next one around it, the Purple Model, is engagement. So engagement means how much you're engaged in what you're doing on a day to day. Now, and that's like in the zone or the flow stuff that, you know, everyone talks about. Mm-hmm. So, and when I finished the course, I was like, that's why I reckon I was almost mostly sad, because why did we play rugby or sport from the first place? Is we just flipping loved it, right?
Yeah.
Like when we went out on that field, it didn't matter if I was 5 or 26, like I was in it. Like I was zoned into what we were doing. I was focused, and that's engagement. So, and so all that good stuff that was happening to me was because, and then the day it stopped, and it still happens for you, I probably just lost 10 hours of flow state or engagement in my week that I didn't even know was part of my life.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man. So I started going, that's why I was sad. I've got no engagement.
Yeah.
And then the next ones, the R's, relationships. So you talked about it before, the inner circle, the boys, relationships. And what we know now, well, what they know is around anyone that thrives or flourishes in life, the number one predictor is the amount of quality relationships and connections they have.
Interesting.
That is the number one. So we go, day one, I said, hey, guys, I'm retired. The next day I'm gone, all that relationship or connection is pretty much gone. It's done.
Yeah.
So you go back to your support networks with your family and that. So there is some of that, but I've just lost a whole chunk of it.
How do you stop that?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So the key things is one, having an understanding, then that's going to be really important. So when that day goes, so before we get to that stage, I would love to be meeting with everyone and going, what does your support network look like when you do retire? Instead of saying, do you retire? How are you going? Oh, they've got a family. They're okay.
Yeah.
But then part of what I want to deliver when we build this course, which we're going to get to, well, we've built this course, is whoever comes on the course and they've just retired, hopefully, now they've got a cohort of people that they've just retired with. So part of the glory of doing the course is not just the course. Now there's hopefully 20 people that are in the same journey that can now connect and be together and be the next team that they're in.
Yeah.
Because now I've just got people that are in the like-minded situation with me that can support me, but we can hang out and spend time. And for the ones that are in the same area, or if that's online or whatever it is, I've just built a cohort to help you through that. Because that's – and then it's developing techniques to really enhance the relationships you have in your environment at the moment, and increasing those and really kind of leaning into those relationships, because you're going to need them because you've just lost a whole chunk of them.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Real fascinating, yeah. And then the next one is M's, the meaning and purpose. And this is a little bit around identity and where we're at, because all the studies say, you know, like you don't let what you do as a job wrap you up as your identity. But I kind of call bullshit on that a little bit, because when we're trying to be our best in high-performing environments and we are all in, like we speak about, you can't not be wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
Like you can't not say that I'm trying to be an All Black. I love this. This is who I am.
Yeah.
So it's hard to unpack that when you retire and say, I'm not that anymore. But it's getting an understanding more about who you are as a person. So you know how, like, we always learn in rugby, you know, I have a real good understanding on what type of player I am. But if I asked you, what type of person are you, could you answer that?
It's a lot tougher, isn't it?
Way tougher, yeah. Eh? So what values do you live by? What who do you want to be as a person? we always get told, who do you want to be as a player?
Yeah.
But why aren't we asking, who do you want to be as a person? Because they're both the same thing.
Yeah.
So now if you ask me, I'm a man that wants to have kindness for people, that wants to always grow and have the love of learning, wants to have some joy and humor in my life. And that's those are my values. And I exuded a lot of those while I was playing, but I had never I didn't have an understanding that's why I was doing those, because that's who I was.
Yeah.
So I was the culture guy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was the guy that always sorted out the team games because I loved it.
Yeah.
But I was also the guy, if someone was injured, I would go and sit beside them because I wanted to be kind to them.
Yeah.
Because I could see that they were struggling. And like at the Rebels, if a new guy came into the team, because we were playing in Melbourne, they always had to fly in from Sydney. So I was the one that went and picked them up from the airport.
Yeah.
That wasn't my job. I was a player.
Yeah.
But I knew, oh man, that guy's coming over. He's going to be struggling.
Yeah.
Like, this is a new environment. Why didn't one of us, a player, go and pick him up? Because that's going to make him feel better. And then he's going to have more of a chance to be better for us on the field. Instead, they get a taxi to pick him up, chuck him in a hotel next to the park by himself.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out why I was thinking that and then no one else was.
You're a lad.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing is, so like when Scotty Fergusthaler came over, so me and Scotty, yeah, the mates, and Jace Woodward, they had signed. I'd been at the Rebels for 2 years. They signed. And I was like, mate, come live with me. Mm. Like, spend the first time, get yourself sorted. But I did that because I was kind and I cared about them, and I knew that would help them because I had struggled when I got over there.
Yeah.
And it's common sense when you look back on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so – the meaning and purpose thing is, the more awareness we can get about who we are and our values and who we want to be. So it took me 5 years of retiring to figure out that my mission in life now is to help people on their mission. As simple as that. So if you come to me and say, Jed, man, I want to be the best person I want to, can be, I'm like, mate, I'm with you. How can I help? Because that's my meaning and purpose, and I'm helping you now.
Yeah.
And that, if that's mentoring kids that want to be their best, and that's some of the job I do now – it can be in any realm, but if you're coming to me and say, I want to be my best at sport or in life, I'm here to help you. That's my mission. And that's kind of with the charity that we've started up with Better Man. It's around helping men be their best. And I want to help you on that journey. And then the last one's accomplishment. So that's the A.
Yeah.
So what do we do in a rugby environment? We're always trying to accomplish a goal or be our best individually or as a team. So I have a goal. I want to make the Wellington Lions, the Hurricanes, be an All Black. I want to win that trophy. So we're accomplishing stuff in the gym. I'm getting a better score. I want to get my bench up. Like, we are living with having a goal, hitting it, keep going, having a goal, hitting it. So this PERMA model that's actually about flourishing in life is what we live with in a rugby environment.
Yeah, without even knowing.
Without even knowing it. So most of the time, people are at their best in that environment because all those things are getting ticked off and they don't even know it. But then they retire. Most of it's gone.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, oh, what's next? But we're so high performing in our career. Why can't we be like that when we finish? And it's changing our mindset about it, right? Because I don't know what you thought. Did you, and I suppose with you changing straight to coaching, it was a little bit different. But my mindset was, I've made my most money. I've conquered that mountain, and that's the best. It's gone. The best of what I've done is gone.
Yeah. I was a little bit like that. But I was a little bit like you as well, in the fact that people would always tell me, you'll be fine after rugby, because I'd always be really engaged in the PD sessions. Yeah. I'd always do my own stuff. And I was always aware of the end point, and I always thought it would come probably sooner than it did, and I never really thought I'd get as far as I did. So I was always preparing for it, but how it did work out for me, I was very fortunate. But it is tough. It's such a tough one because you can't really do stuff. I know you did your pizza company, but it's pretty hard to set something up while you're still playing, because playing's full time. You know, you can't.
You're all in.
You can't really try and grow a business. Like, you can, but it's going to be very half-assed. And it's a good way to learn and try and do things, but you can't like go full or all into what you want to set up.
Totally agree, because you have to be single focused to be our best in that environment. So people are always like, why aren't you doing more? I was like, well, they've got to be single focused though. They have to focus on what this is, because it's we're going to war. Like yeah. this is what we're doing without the death. But that's the mentality. Like unless you're in it, it's hard to explain to people. It's not like that.
Yeah. Injuries are a good chance to definitely
step back.
Yeah. Yeah. Give it a go. So is that where you, did you have many injuries where you
luckily I had a lot of little ones, but nothing big where I was, you know, Rico on my shoulder and I needed 6 months off.
Yeah.
But I probably, the different thing for me was because it started later, I already had a diploma in exercise science by the time I started, and I was still studying a little bit and I was working through. And so I was probably further ahead than a lot of other guys are now, which makes me more worried because of what that looks like. So we think about this PERMA model. The last one's V, which is kind of beyond, which is vitality, which is sleep, eat, and move.
Yeah.
So that's what rugby is, man.
Yeah.
It's sleep, eat, move. So you add in the PERMA, but then you look at the V, I stop eating as well. I move, but not as much. And then the sleep, and then we don't really focus on our sleep, but that's there. But I was, so these, all these parts just kind of drop down to maybe 20% of what they were at 100%.
Mm.
So no wonder we're sad and struggling.
Mm.
But then you add in that I've got two kids, I've got to pay the mortgage, the stresses of life that come with that. I'm not 20 leaving uni going, I'm transitioning. I'm 33 with kids and a mortgage. It's just so loaded, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really hard transition for everybody. And I liked when I listened to Shano has taken heaps of his high performance characteristics from what he knew as a player to try and get his head right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really clever. Like he's leaving no stone unturned to find out how he can get himself right. And it's sad for him because it's such a hard thing to get right because you don't know about your head. But he's going, I'm going to do everything in my possibility to get myself right.
Mm.
And, you know, I played with Shane for a year. That's how he plays. Like, I'm going to do everything in my power to be my best.
He's all in that.
He's all in, right?
Yeah.
So he's gone, okay, it's a different challenge now, but I'm all in to sort myself out.
Mm.
And this is where the sad thing gets in, is he's doing it by himself.
Mm.
So – and this is sad thing, and you can't blame all of New Zealand rugby, but they love you while they're yours or theirs. They love you while I'm here when it's about winning championships, and I'll do anything to break there for you. But when that day ends, I don't know about you, I got one email after 8 months, Jed, how you going?
They knew you would be all right, mate.
Exactly. Exactly right. So I remember reaching out after 8 months to Steve Simons and going, hey, mate, can you help me with my CV? I'm struggling to find a job. And I was reaching out to him because there was no one really in that space. And I get it. It's on me. Like, it's like a job. I've left that job, but it's not a job. I've just battled for someone for 10 years and given all my life to it.
Mm.
So I think there needs to be change.
And is this why you set up your thing?
When I finished the course, I'd already gone, I've got to do something for these retired players.
Yeah.
And I finished the course and I went, all right, this is it. I'm going to take the best parts of this course and what I've learned about how it was challenging for me, and let's make this into a 2-day course that athletes who retire can come and do, and let's help them change their mindset around what's next. Because what I believe now is your second mountain should be better than your first. Because everything I learned from that first one, just like you, all those characteristics, growth mindset, daily training, consistency, working hard, taking on feedback, all that stuff can be used to make your second mountain even better.
Mm.
So I want to change anyone that retired's mindset around the next stage, and also to say there's hope for you. There's hope to be better and to take this to the next stage. So we've built this 2-day course, which we haven't been able to get funded to deliver because at this stage, organizations, it's new, right? So they don't know the value in it, or they don't want to value it. It's a hard one. But it's all bound by science. It's all by the godfather, you know, the goat of Marnie Seligman. So it's all bound by science. So I want to share it, and I want to give it back to the players to say, hey, you can do this. Mm. Like this is possible, and here's the framework. Let's use all those characteristics from you playing, and let's put it into this framework and make your next part of your life even better.
Mate, I love it.
Because the sad thing is, Jimmy, there's always only about 150 professional players within New Zealand, but that retirement pool's at 600 now.
Mm.
So that pool of 150 is staying the same, but this pool is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And what we know is about 1 in 5 of that group will have some sort of mental health challenge, dependency on drug, gambling, alcohol. That's at the bottom of the cliff.
Mm.
But what about all the ones in the middle where I sat as well? So I wasn't at that end, but this is going to help anyone in that kind of continuum to kind of come out and be better. But so effectively, we just look at rugby players, there's 150 of those that are really struggling or have really, really struggled, and they're not getting the support they need.
Mm. It's crazy, eh?
Sad. It's sad because they loved us while we were there.
Yeah, yeah. And is it just for rugby players or is it for all sports?
All sports. So, I mean, rugby's obviously where my mind came to start with it, but it's for all sports, male, female, anyone that's looking to transition out of the game at any game.
Mm.
We want to hear from them. We want to get them involved, and we want to try and start this course next year. So we'll chuck it up in the link notes, but we'll have a link to the website betterman.org.nz with a little link in there, and just to kind of express your interest to be on it. Mm. And we'll kind of look to try and get it, some sort of funding and support to get it done, and let's see what we can do with it and get some people through it and show the worth, and hopefully through word of mouth and doing it that people will go, man, this is something that should be part of your contract.
Yeah.
So when you sign your contract, part of you retiring and coming through that is you finish with the 2-day transition course.
Mm.
Like when you do when you start Super Rugby and you have the day
induction. Yeah.
You have a transition finish as well, which
makes
is part
a lot of sense, eh? Too much.
that's the thing, right? Like I started sitting there going, oh, is this am I thinking this out? Is it more hard than it is? I don't think it is. It's just, and everyone transitions in life through different phases, right?
Mm.
So why can't we let them have a better transition and support that and give them some of that stuff that they've had in there and take it through to the next part?
Mm. And is it done online? Like, how does that work?
Nah, so we will have two options. We prefer it to do in person.
Yeah.
So we're not sure of the short, like if we can get the funding right, we'll run in different parts, maybe one in the North Island, one in the South Island.
Mm.
But for the guys overseas, we will look to, it can be done online. But the better ones in person, because it's connection with their cohort.
Yeah.
You know, it's that relationship building.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, we talk a little bit about we're taught so much as men and as rugby players to be strong and brave. But part of being a man is, and this is why I love the potty so much, mate, is it's about being vulnerable. Mm. Because that's being a man too. And that's like, where do we, and that's becoming more and more normal. But that's probably like what I loved about Tim and Shane and Hugh, and why I reached out to you, mate, because I was like, these guys have been vulnerable and telling their stories, and we can all learn from this.
Yeah.
And the more we can add that part of what it means to be part of a high-performance environment, it's only going to make us better, and it's going to allow us to transition better and be better players at the time as well.
Mm. Mate, it's exciting for what's ahead, especially in that space, because – mate, I hear it all too often on this, how hard that transition is, but I love it how you speak about the mindset and like being excited about that next chapter, because I don't think there's too many guys. I know there's a lot of anxiety from players around, shit, what's next? Like, what the hell am I going to do? But that excitement of knowing that what you've learned through your rugby career puts you in a really good position to make that next mountain bigger.
Totally, totally. And it's our self-limiting beliefs that we have in everything, right? So that's part of the course, is how do we sit down and look at the self-limiting beliefs we have and go, actually, let's change this narrative. Let's go, nah, man, like, we can do this. And then hopefully you walk away with some understanding around what your positive emotions will look like. I'll give you a good example, actually. So when I finished the course, I was like, man, I need some more like engagement and zone. And I love playing sports. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's social. I'm hundies all at night. I'm yelling at everyone, but I'm fully engaged in it, right? So I was like, I'll start up a dodgeball team. Because I was like, I can't, like, I need to do something. So I got some dads from my street. So there's like 5 dads in the street. And I hit them up and said, let's start a dodgeball team. But I was doing it purely for myself, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, man, I need some like engagement in sports. So I said, let's play some dodgeball. Bought a dodgeball, but better start doing some throwing because I'm going to throw my arm out here. And then I got a few of the boys in, and we ended up with about 10. Week 2, I'm going full hundies. Guy goes to throw the ball at me and I jump back and tear both my cuffs. And then like fully tear them. Like I thought someone had shot me from behind.
True.
And I got down on all, like on my all fours and I like just crawled off the, like played on indoor netball and crawled off. And everyone was like, what are you doing, mate? And I'm like, oh, mate, I've torn both my calves. And I crawled off like 30 meters to the net and had to pull the net back and then just sit there and watch the rest of the game. And I was out for about 8 weeks and came back and then tore my calf again. But when I was playing, I flipping loved it.
Yeah.
And then the cool thing about it was I brought a group of dads together. So this is the connection piece, right?
Yeah.
So I brought a group of dads together. We started playing. Then they started coming around to my house and we did some workouts.
Yeah.
And then I made a little group and then we started hanging out. And then one of the guys had a house in Kaikoura, so we went down there and played some golf.
Yeah.
But it actually all just started from me saying, hey, I want to play some dodgeball. You want to jump in?
Yeah.
And it's called the broaden and build cycle, which is a real cool cycle. So you broaden your physical resources by playing and that, but you actually broaden your social resources as well. So I did it purely for me off that course because I needed some engagement, ripped my calves out, but had five guys and then built this little crew around me.
Yeah.
And now we've been working out together and hanging out for like last 3 or 4 years.
Dodgeball career done though?
Done. All of them, either I blew my calves out, all of them done their rotators because you're trying to throw like this ball that's like weighed nothing. And again, I was like, oh, I'll go in the first game and I'll take it easy.
Yeah.
As soon as the whistle went, I was like, handies.
Compared to.
And all the dads are looking at me, I was like, run over there, like, get up there. Like, I was like, I didn't even know the game. I was like, I just got locked in. But again, if I didn't have that, I only learned that self-awareness 3 years after, or 4 years after I retired by doing the course. I was like, ah, damn it, why didn't I start up? So imagine when we retire now and we go, okay, boys, we're going to have this, you're going to go into this indoor cricket league when you retire.
Yeah.
And there's a huge, and it might be some of the boys that are still playing.
Yeah.
But you're still keeping that connection. It sounds, it's not hard. Mm. And the boys, everyone boys love playing different sports.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm still staying connected. I don't lose all my Messenger and WhatsApp groups that day it retires and bye-bye, sayonara.
Yeah.
I'm not going to coffees with them anymore. You know, like all that stuff is actually our well-being.
Mm.
But we don't see it as that.
Yeah, mate.
Crazy, eh?
So good. So is it, when's it too early to start? Or like when would you suggest to start looking at it, like, obviously, there's a lot of young guys coming through. When do they start really looking at life after sport?
I think the whole way through your career, some of this course that I want to do for transitioning, I'd love to give to some of the players now so they can start looking at some of the, because it's like a kitty or a tool of things. So when you get injured, what are you going to do to help you bring yourself back? Because you're allowed to be flat. But remember I said about resilient people don't just get stuck in one emotion.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of the boys that go to their room, play PlayStation for 3 weeks and lock themselves away, no wonder they come back and they're still flat because they're not connected, they're not using any tools and strategies. So I think for me it's about them understanding and have more self-awareness around what things make them feel their best.
Mm.
So if they can learn that the whole way through, but we also need to change our narrative around, like, I'd love you to ask the boys to sit down and do a and they've done a little bit about personality, you know, the old dots that everyone talks about, but I'd love them to sit down more and go, and I don't know if you've heard the deathbed letter or the retirement letter. So when you retire, what do you, if an article went in the paper, what would you want it to say? Because now you start unpacking what their actual values are. They're not going to say, I want to be an All Black. They might
one
say that.
One-paced.
Yeah, one-paced waddler. But the thing is, what I'm most proud about when I look back on my career is actually the person I became. Like, I can't remember what game I won and lost. And it was actually that I was, you know, under stress, learnt to be my best, had a go at being who I could be, but also was kind and helped out the team and picked up guys. That's a bit I look back on and most fondly. It's not the guy that was on the field, it's actually the guy off the field that I'm most fond about. But we don't talk about that.
No.
So imagine you've got an agreement, go, hey boys, these are all our values up on the ward. What ones align to who you want to be? Because that will still come out in their game. So it's probably teaching them some of this stuff along the way. So when they do retire, they've got this whole kind of toolbox already ready.
Yeah.
To take them into the next bit. They're allowed to be sad. They've just finished their career that they're all wrapped up in. But there is a whole lot more that they can use to help them bounce back and go into that next phase.
You got me thinking about like injuries, like when guys do get that long-term injury, whether there is something like a day course or something for them to, you know, jump in and say, okay, like I'm out for 12 months, 9 months. Let's start looking, you know, planning for this next chapter.
Yeah. And then so, and that's the thing, like the more we can embed, you know, the old IPP.
Yeah.
You know, like individual performance plan for the people that don't know, like this gold, you know, like green, red, orange, whatever they want to use. But imagine if that IPP had a lot more around. So this is what you need to do technically and tactically. What are you doing to be resilient off field?
Mm.
So, and another good example is I remember with Jamie Joe when I was at the Lions, I fractured my eye socket. Jeremy Thrush kneed me in my own team.
Absolute grab.
Thrushy kneed me. And then, you know, fractured my eye socket. I was out for 6 weeks or something. And then he rang me up and goes, sorry, mate, you know, like, you know, being nice. And he goes, go home, have a roast with the family, mate. And I did that. And it was actually him. That's actually a really good tool.
Yeah.
So love food. Went and had some food, went with the people in my support network that were close to me when I was flat, and I went and had a feed with them. And so that was actually a tool. He didn't know he was giving me that tool. He knew I love food like him. So he was like, go have a roast with the family. But I always did that. So whenever I was flat, I'd go home to mum's and have a feed and be with her.
Yeah.
So I was actually doing a tool that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
But it comes back to fostering that self-awareness again. Half those boys don't realize that. They go in their room and do, you know, like lock themselves away and how do we bring them in? And I think I remember hearing about you, like you went straight in your engine, you want to help coaching.
Mm.
So you're actually using a tool. You're going, how can I help the team? These are my values. I love the team. I love who they are.
Mm.
So I can't do it this way, but I can do it this way. So I'm going to come in and step in and help out.
Mm.
And that's, you know, like you got a few awards at the Canes for who, you know, like the person you were. Do you look back fondly on those awards? Like when you,
more than anything, really. Like I'm with you. Like it was, like games are games at the end of the day. But you always remember the people, the people that they were, the tours, the laughs, all that sort of thing. Eh? Yeah. Like you do remember parts of games, like the guys who like really put their body on the line for you. You remember those guys, but it was all about what sort of person they were. So
it's funny, eh? And then so like when I look now, like I love looking at Artie Sevier, like Artie, but I love the way he plays, but I love the person he is and how he interacts. Like I was watching the thing when, you know, when Fozzie was, you know, they were going through that and he was the one and rung him up and said, hey, mate, like this is a player doing this. I was like, far out, this guy's awesome. Mm. Like he's seen through all the shit and gone, I care about this man. I want to look after him.
Mm.
But we don't open a light to that enough. Nah. We kind of go, oh, yeah, it's always like he's this brutal guy on the field, which he flipping is. But what a man off the field to live by that kind of values and network. And I want the players to aspire to be their best on the field, but also to aspire to be their best off it with this stuff as well and to learn more about it instead of, just kind of wafting through and not really understanding that they're doing all this good stuff.
And I feel like guys like Artie and all that coming out just going to inspire the next generation. Look at Khaleesi as well. That guy carries himself like a true champion of like what he is off the field and what he believes and what he stands for. It's like you hear him speak and you just can't not be inspired by it. And you can only imagine how many like young kids coming through. It's awesome to have those role models for these guys.
Totally agree. And they're shining a light on a different scent, which we haven't in the past.
Yeah.
And probably, as you know, and the hard thing about this is, and a lot of people will look at or listen and go, oh, all these All Blacks will be okay. They've got lots of money.
Yeah.
But that's only the top 40.
Yeah.
You know, like I retired and had half a house paid off, which is way above everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, I probably averaged $120,000 a year or something over my career, and it got me enough to, which I'm purely grateful for, that to have a house. But then I still had a mortgage and three kids at that stage, and that's it. I wasn't in that top 40.
Yeah,
there's only 40 of those. The other 110 are battling away.
Yeah.
So it's such a different variance. And what about the ones that only just get to the NPC level? Like, what about them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the ones that bail out from academy and they're done. Mm. Like, there are so many layers to this, and everybody needs it in different ways, but they all need it. And I'll shout out to Colsey here. But I'd love to Colsey to do it. I think it would be awesome for Colsey.
There you go. Free pass to Dane Coles. There you go, mate. Colsey,
well, he's decided to go to Japan and make millions of dollars in the last 4 months anyway. I loved it when I saw him on thing. And they said, "Oh, you know, the wife said do it." Of course, the wife said do it. Mate. It's only 4 more months. So like that, and that's what I think when I sat there and I looked around the room when I was retiring, and I don't know if you're the same. I looked around the room and I went, "He'll be okay. He won't. He'll be okay. He won't." And I was like, this is crap, man. Like, this is why am I we leaving this up to chance? Like, it's not right.
Yeah.
And we only hear about the stories in the papers and it, you know, like Bill, and it's flipping sad, man. And they're the 1 in 5 that I spoke about. And so there's a whole lot up there and there's a whole lot in the middle that needs support too. And we can do something about it.
Mate, you're doing good things.
So, thanks, mate. Thanks. It's been a while. It's a journey to get here, right? Yeah. Like, again, I wish I found the course earlier, but I don't know if I'd be here either if it didn't take 3 or 4 years to me to wade through all that stuff to go, come on, we can, you know, like this is it. And I'm lucky now because Denise Quinlan and Lucy are kind of my mentors now. So I've stepped out of that environment into this incredible environment and these two people to kind of support me, along with Wellbeing Works, which is a company that's part of them, a lady called Kim Day, who's helped me develop the course. So it's using my experiences as a player, the understanding I've learned from the diploma, but then using experts to go, okay, how do we bring this all together and have a crack and see what it can do and help people.
Yeah, mate, looking forward to the Waterlad effect taking over from here. We've seen it with Tim Bateman's books, Cody's Eclipse. Now,
past players course. Come on, come on, come on, Waterlad. Yeah,
do your thing. Anyway, we've gone to our questions. Got a few goodies here. We'll see. We got through a few of them actually. But how many times did Jamie Joseph say "no good" to me? So
no good and bread and butter. So bread and butter was his down and ups. Man, the amount of times he told me no good. I still remember a time when I got injured on the ground and we were doing a drill.
Yeah.
And he said, "No good" to me. And he just moved the drill. Like, I was quite injured. The physio had to come and he just kind of pushed me onto the ground and walked over there. And another time we were doing lifting training. This was Wellington Beast days.
Yeah.
I had no mouth guard in at the end of training and we're doing lifting and the lock's going to jump and he's uppercutting me and knocked my front tooth out.
Oh, shit. And I thrashy again.
No, I wish it was. Knocked my tooth out. And he's looked at me and said, "Come on, mate." And I'm on the ground trying to find my front tooth. And he's like, "You're no good to me." And I walked off trying to find my tooth and had to go to the dentist. Ruthless.
Oh, he was ruthless. Oh, he is. Okay, next one. Would love to get his thoughts on his cricket coaching career, specifically making year nines cry because they couldn't catch a high ball.
Who sent that one through? When I was about 18 or 19, I coached the Wellington under 13 cricket side.
Yeah.
And I remember going out there and I got golf balls and all sorts. And I was just, because they're all scared of catching the ball. And I was like, okay, we'll go for an hour here. And I was just smashing the ball. Then they're all catching. I was like, do it again. I was probably channeling a bit of Jamie Joe when I was 18.
Being inspired. Okay, next one. Was he really convinced that he had the best bacon and egg pie at the Marist Albion Pie Comp 2017?
100% I did. Like, because I backed my bacon in that as well from the pizza stuff. So they did. I coached there in 2017. They do a bacon and egg competition.
Yeah.
And they gave me third. It was bullcrap. I think it was just because I was head coach, eh? Like, I got shafted. I definitely had the best one, eh? Free range eggs. I went the whole range, eh? The whole lot.
Okay. Next one, what was your thoughts on the move Apple? Obviously, we heard about the Apple move on Danny Cipriani's one. 15-man pick and go.
Yeah, I have to give this part to Sippers. They like it. We did joke about it a lot. What are we doing? Like, Rod talked lots about changing the game. We're going to change the game. And then this Apple slice move came out. But probably the difference between us and Danny, we didn't front the coach in front of everyone. It's my first year of doing what I told.
You would have been all for a pick and go. Get a jelly bean line in there.
I set up 2 tries from the slice from it in the end. It took about 3 years, but I was doing what I was told, mate. I was trying to get a contract and stay there. I wasn't being Sippers, eh?
Fair enough. Okay, last one. Best piece of advice for a Waterlad listener?
I mean, I probably spoke about it as I think we've got to think differently about how we are as people. And it's not about what we do, it's about who we are.
Mm.
And it's deep. But I'd love us to think more about who we want to be as people and exude those values more, and the rest take care of itself.
Mm.
You know, when you meet people, you always go, hey, mate, what do you do?
Yeah.
Imagine if we start asking, hey, mate, who do you want to be? Like, what kind of makes you who you are, and where are you from? And that's, the Multi-Pacific is awesome with that. Always asking, you know, where you're from, and they want to connect to you as a person instead of just what I do as a job.
Yeah.
So it's diving into that stuff more about who you, what your values are, what's your meaning and purpose, and trying to really live by that.
Mm, mate, love it. What a way to finish.
Come Jeez, on.
What a podcast. Come on, the Waddle Out Effect. Get this thing humming. But, mate, really appreciate you coming on, reaching out. And, mate, that was some unreal stuff there that you've shared. And I know such a big part of the game. So hopefully there's someone out there who's got something at it and they're keen to come over and jump on the course and get a real experience.
Thanks, Jimmy. And I want to say again, mate, like I said to you in the email, it doesn't sit lightly with me that you're giving guys opportunities to be vulnerable and to tell their story. And I know you probably didn't set out with Timmy when you started, when he started kind of unleash this lock of, oh man, what's next? But appreciate you having the ability to do it for us. And mate, you're doing it on this end with the consistency and driving it and allowing us to kind of showcase what people can do.
Mm.
So appreciate it, mate.
Mate, appreciate you. You're a lad. Thanks for tuning into the episode. Since you've made it all the way to the end, I'm hoping that you've enjoyed the episode. And if you have, there's just a couple of things you can do to help me out. First is to subscribe or to follow to whatever platform you're listening to it on. That roughly takes 1 second. Secondly, if you could give it a 5-star review, that roughly takes 2 seconds. That helps out massively. Too. And thirdly, you could write a wonderful review about the podcast if you've got a spare minute or two. That also helps out more than you know. Lastly, I forgot about this one. If you really want to help out, go and get yourself some Waddle Ad merch at waddlead.com and help spread the love. Appreciate it. Waddle Ad, Waddle Ad, Waddle Ad.